All right, so today we had Doc's introduction yesterday with our Fangton de Hele Kuperec. I don't know where our Capitan has gone, traveling around probably, but we're at right at the beginning of the new Perec. Omar Lehem HaMimune. So remember the Mumune, what the Mumune means is actually Machlokas Rashi and Tosis we had before. According to Rashi, the Mumune is the Sgan that is appointed as the backup or the heel nipper, the way the Gemara understood it in the end, of the Kohen Gadol. But Tosfos proves from the Yerushalmi that that's certainly not the case there. And he argues in both where we had it before and also over here. So he's just the person that is actually in charge of the times in the Beis HaMikdash. Anyway, so the Mumuneh tells the Kohanim, Tzu'u uru'u im higi hazman hashchita. So now we need to know whether is it time for us to shecht the carbon tamid or not, because if you shechted the carbon tamid in the middle of the night, even if it's right before the morning, it would be possible, because it says biyom zivchachem, and we would have to burn the carbon tamid. So we need to be very careful that the dawn had already arrived. So they go outside, they stand up on the roof on a tower, imigia haroe omer barkai. So the person who went out, the lookout, would say, it's bright. There's a light. Barkai means more than stam, that it's dawn. It means that you can see the shine. Matya ben Shmuel omer, he'ir pnei kol hamizrach. Now, this is not clear. Is this question answered? The Gemara is going to explain all of this. Did the entire sky light up? Or the entire sky all the way, the entire east is lit up? So it's a question or it's an answer. That's not clear. Atche bechavron, question or answer, not clear. But somebody's asking a question because somebody's answering a question because it says, Vu Omer Hain. Yes. Now, who he is not clear because it's not clear what the dialogue over here. But the Gemara will explain. Veloma hutzrach lakach. Why? I mean, we make such a fuss. Well, that's because Pa'am Achad, Alam or Halavana, one time they thought that when the moon was rising, they thought that it was actually the sun. The Dimushe Ir Mizrach, and it was really, it's still nighttime. They thought it was a sunrise for Shachatu et HaTamid, and in the end, when they realized their mistake, they had to be Hotziu LeBeit HaSreifa. They had to take the Tamid out to the Beit HaSreifa, because if you shechted a carbon at night, it is possible. You can't exactly do it over again, like we said yesterday about the Shnei Gizrei Etzim. If we would have put them on by accident, take them off and back on again, it would be pretty hard to unshecht the tamid and then shecht it again. As a matter of fact, that's why time is moving in that direction. And it's because of that we need to see what time it is in the first place. Horidu Kohen Gadol. Now, all of this talk about actually on Yom Kippur. Now, until now, it's not clear that we were talking about a Yom Kippur because the last parak, we were talking about the payasot. There's that big machlokas we're showing him whether there even was that payas on Yom Kippur, because that's the machlokas, whether the Kohen Gadol had to do every last thing that we're doing the payasot for or not. So, but now we're definitely on Yom Kippur morning here. Horidu Kohen Gadol beit tefillah. They took the Kohen Gadol down to the tefillah. So why does it say down to the tefillah? That we're going to have to see exactly what that means in the Gemara later on, because, I mean, Lamaisa, he doesn't go down. We're talking about the tefillah we're going to talk before in the morning. Zaklala Yaba Migdash, and in general, it's not only the Kohen Gadol. This was a tefillah that anybody would have to go into, and it's because of that that, remember, this tefillah was, of course, B'Makom Chol, and that's because the rule is that Kol HaMesach HaMesech Et Raglav Ta'un Tefillah, that anybody who uses the bathroom and he has to move his bowels, he will require tefillah. That was a takon of the knis in the Beis HaMikdash, and he has to make sure that he's completely clean and we were mechayev him to go into the mikvah. V'chol amei tilmayim, and just for urinating, he needs to be ton kiddush yadayim v'raglayim. He would need to, even though he doesn't need to go to the mikvah, he would need to go and wash from the kiyor. All of this will be discussed in detail in the Gemara. Why, by the way, do we mention Chevron? That's interesting. The Yerushalmi brings that we mention Chevron in order that there should always be a presence of the Ovais in our mind, to be maskers of Chus Ovais. Tommy's been not necessarily talking about Hebron over here. We should say Yir Kopnei Kol Am Yisrael. But we want to say, has the sunlight stretched all the way to Hebron to include the Ma'aras HaMachpelah? Those of you who remember our discussions in the Chumash Shiurim about the Ma'aras HaMachpelah will recall that there may be other issues over here, and that the Ma'aras HaMachpelah is essentially the underground of the Beis HaMikdash. And as the Zohar explains, the Tefillahs actually move from the Ma'aras HaMachpelah first, and they're brought there into the Beis HaMikdash, and that the presence that is always on top of the ground when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash is always foundational in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. So that may be a different issue of why we want to talk about only the schus of the office. Anyway, Tanya Rabbi Yishmael Omer, there's different ways of understanding what exactly the lookout said. So Rabbi Yishmael says that the lookout would say, Barak Barkai, which is like a higher, more greater darga of the shine has really started to shine. Rabbi Akiva says, Allah Barkai, it's gotten up there. So apparently that's a little bit later. Nechuma ben Apakshion Omer, Af Barkai beChevron, it's even bright in Hebron. And Matya ben Shmuel, ha-mimune ala payasot omer, he'ir pnei kol ha-mizrach ad shebechevron, and that seems to be, according to the way that we're learning it over here, it means even a little bit later. The Sabachlokas was shown him whether that means even a little bit later or not, but most understand from the Seder that that's what it means. Rabbi Yehuda ben Betira omer, he'ir pnei kol ha-mizrach ad bechevron, and not only that, Yatsu kolam ish ish lachto. I see people moving around already, and the buses are running. The Gemara says, "What? I mean, if that would be the case, it's already. I mean, it's pretty late. Why would we make the zman hashchita so late? Noga leituva. That would be. It's like very light already. We don't mean that the buses are running. We mean that the people that are going out to hire people that are working, they're out on the road. They don't take buses." And they are there much earlier than the regular movement because they need to compete with others to make sure that they get the workers that are out there in the morning to be hired. It's like, I don't know if it's still there, but like it used to be around Shar Shechem, we had all the Sabalim. If you wanted a Sabal, you got out early in the morning and you grabbed the Sabal. Amar Rav Safra. So now that we're talking about, we talked about the morning, let's talk about the Tamid Shobeina Arbaim. So Amar Rav Safra, Tzlute de Avraham, Miki Mishachre Kotle. The time that Avram Avinu began davening Mincha was immediately when he could. And when was that? That was when the walls start darkening. When do the walls darken? So you have an exactly straight wall at noon precisely. Of course, this is as any sun clock will show you. At noon, precisely, that properly aligned dial will have no shadow whatsoever. Why? Because the top is where the sun will hit exactly, and the edge of the wall prevents any light from coming down on either side of the wall. So at that point, what was previously bright because the sun was hitting it from the side now turns dark at noon, which means that Avram Avinu would daven Mincha at the first second that he could. So the minute that the sun was directly above, any second after that, the sun is already moving towards the west. And because of that, he would daven early. Now, the question, of course, is, I mean, it was Yitzchak Avinu who was the one who's mitaken to daven Mincha, no? I mean, so how come we bring Avram Avinu over here specifically? There's different approaches, which is going to be again the question I'm going to raise in a moment, so that even though actually Avram Avinu had davened, it was Yitzchak Avinu who was mitaken tefilat mincha. So it's true that he used Avram Avinu's original insight that it's appropriate to daven at this time, but he made it a kvius for all the Bnei Avram throughout the Deres that they should daven mincha. But there's also the question of whether is it really true that the time to daven mincha is exactly at noon or not. I mean, what it seems to be saying over here in the Gemara is that, and since that was the time that Avram Avinu davened, so it's assumed that that's the time that we should daven, which is not so poshut. First of all, does in general machlokas rishonim about whether mincha gedola is the right time lechatchila to daven or mincha ketana is the right time to daven? I mean, what the Gemara is saying over here, as Rav Yosef immediately says, Rav Yosef, is it right to expect any people that are just like us to learn from Avram Avinu how to be zoris? Anan mi Avraham nekom v'nigmar. I mean, how can anybody be on the madriga of Avram Avinu to be so careful that it should be exactly the earliest that you should do? So again, the mashmaut is that yes, indeed, that's what the Gemara is assuming. So we know that there's two zmani mincha. The period from Chatzos to the end of the day is split into two parts. So we have half of it is towards the evening, that's 9.5 hours, and that is called the Zman HaMincha Ketana. And the entire thing starts at Chatzos, and that's called the Zman HaMincha Gedola, which we put off until 12:30, as 6:30 in terms of the Gemara, because of the way that we spoke before about the Zman of the Shechitas HaTamid. So this is a question. What is more important? The Rambam says that the din of Mincha Gedola is only B'diavad, meaning that, doesn't mean literally B'diavad, as the Aruch HaShulchan explains, it means that you should only use that Zman if you have a compelling reason to do so. So you want to go into a Seuda, and you wanted to eat before, daven before, things like that. So then you daven Mincha Gedola. But otherwise, you should daven Mincha Ketana. The Rosh learns the opposite. The Rosh learns that, on the contrary, you ought to daven Mincha Gedola. If you have a daven Mincha Gedola, so then you can go ahead and daven all the way until the night. The Loshon in the Shulchan Aruch is indeed Mishit Palel Tfilat Mincha Le'achar Sheish Sha'ot U'Mechtza L'Mala Yatsa. But Iker Zmana is Mitesha Sha'ot U'Mechtza, which is in fact the Shita of the Rambam. Very fascinating. Okay, the Rosh, as we know, and many other Rishonim also don't paskin like that. So then the issue would be, is it possible that there are two separate Zmanim? Meaning that Avram Avinu, the reason that Gemara wants to talk about Avram Avinu is because the original idea of what is possible for that time of the Aveda comes from Avram Avinu. And even though we know that there's the Shailas Ovais Tiknun, or were they attacking the Tfilas Kneged, the Avedas in the Beis HaMikdash, Kneged the Karbonais, so the reason that we want to talk about Avram Avinu is because that original takona is from Chatzos. And perhaps when Yitzchak Avinu came along, maybe by that time he had in mind the Zman that would be for the Karban Tamid, which is later, half an hour later. And because of that, the Gemara goes back to Avram Avinu over here. After all, Yitzchak would be more sensitive to the Zman of the Karbonis because he was brought on the Mizbeach. But anyway, the question...
And that could be why it's stressing Le'eseks HaShoevos. It's stressing that Yitzchak is later in the Pasuk describing it.
Ah, very nice. So the answer that Rava says to Rabbi Yosef is, and why not? What, you say that we don't expect people to learn Zrizus from Avram? Omar Rava Tana Gomar Mi Avram? The Tana taught us from Avram Avinu. We shouldn't learn from him. I understand. If the Tana teaches it, it means it's to tell us that that's who to look at as your model. The Tanya, Uvayom Hashemini, Yimo Besar Arlato, anytime on the eighth day, you're supposed to do Mila. This teaches us, Melamed, Shekol Hayom Kasher L'Mila. So Me'ikar Adin, a Bris Mila can be anytime in the day. Ela Shazrizim Makdimim L'Mitzvot, people that have Zrizos, they come early to do mitzvahs. Shenemar vayashkem Avram baboker vayach voshet chamor. Why are we bringing a raya from vayashkem Avram baboker? Must be because the Tanna wants us to realize that Avram Avinu should serve as our model for Zrizus. So what do you care if we are learning out from Avram Avinu what the earliest man of the Aved of the Tamid should be? Huh? Exactly. It's a beautiful, beautiful, really one of the most stunning Rav Tzodek's who explains this inyan, that how is it that indeed, I mean, there's plenty of people that are closer in time to us than Avraham Avinu that we could have brought examples of Zrizus. So why is it Avraham Avinu specifically that the Tana wants us to see as the Zoris? So he explains that Avraham Avinu is the youth of Klal Yisrael. And in that sense, we always relate to him as our own youth. In other words, the connection that we have to as B'nai Yisrael of our earliest experiences of life, of our childhood, is Avraham Avinu, so to speak. Isn't that a beautiful insight? So children are always Zoris. They're always moving about. They got plenty of energy. So we want to see Avraham Avinu as the source of our sense of Zrizus as children. Really beautiful. Anyway, so I'll tell you. I mean, Rav Yosef obviously had no problems learning from Avraham Avinu. That wasn't what Rav Yosef had asked. Elam Aravi, you know what Rav Yosef was bothered by? He was bothered by this. It said, we had before when we were learning Psachim, Chal Arve Psachim Liyot Ba'er of Shabbat, Nishchat B'Sheish V'mecht. It says over there that the Tamid, we shechted only at 6:30, which is 12:30 in our times. So it's only a half an hour into the afternoon. By the way, there's a question in Halacha L'Maisa about whether this means a half an hour is manit or it's an actual half an hour. That's already the Mishnah Berurah even talks about that in the Shaar HaTzion. But in any event, it would be nishchat b'shesh v'mechtza, not b'shesh. V'korev b'sheva v'mechtza. So what it was that Rav Yosef was bothered by is that according to what Rav Safra said about the tefilase of Avraham Avinu, why don't we in fact do the Shechitas HaTamid from the moment that the walls of the Beis HaMikdash turned dark, meaning that would be exactly when the sun is directly above, and that would be at noon, mamish noon. And since we're looking over here, this was talking about on Pesach, where it was on an Erev Shabbos, where we need every last second that we have, because we needed to have enough time to shecht all of these millions of Korban Pesachs, and people needed time before Shabbos to be able to be Tzela the Pesach. So why didn't we take advantage of the Zman that Rav Safra was saying, which we could start like immediately at noon, an half hour before? Wait a minute, I don't understand. What exactly is the question? My kusha. I mean, maybe the idea over here is that even though Rav Safra said Michi Mishachri Katle, he didn't mean a wall that goes straight up and down, because the walls in the Beis HaMikdash were wider at the bottom than they were at top. And if they were wider at the bottom, then even if it was noon, the bottom of the wall would still be lit up because it would not be blocked by the edge of the wall on top, right? So if they would have actually done the Avedas HaTamid, the simple people wouldn't have realized that there was a diagonal to the wall and that it was not actually what it appeared to be, which was before noon. It was really already in the afternoon, technically speaking, even though the walls were still lit to the east because of the angle, that they were picking up the sun that was already noted to the west. So they would come and they would think that you're allowed to be shechting before the afternoon. They would daven mincha before the afternoon. So maybe that's why we do from the time in which it's clear that it's Bechimi Shachre Katle, because the Omakota de Beit HaMikdash B'Shesh V'Mechza M'Shachre, Mishum Dolom Echavne Tuva. They weren't made to be exactly straight. These were extremely high walls, remember. And because of that, they needed to be supported more at the bottom so that there was always a slight diagonal. They went up on top from the bottom. They went in a little bit. Or maybe also Avraham Avinu is different, because Avraham Avinu was a tremendous bookie in astronomy. And because of that, he was able to work out a calendar that he could tell you exactly when it was that the Chatzos Hayom was. But other people, I mean, we can't rely on just a regular guy to tell me that it's exactly Chatzos. So we need to allow that extra time not to pass the Tamid, don't we? Rabbi Kaplan is calling in the background to remind us all of the Mishachri Ponim of the Aniyim. And let us remember, please, the possibility of being Mitztaref to Tzedakah for Lil Kabbalah Satera be a nice schus.
Maybe you should please post how we can transfer money.
Right. Inami, Mishum Dezakin V'yoshev V'yoshev Ahavi. And there's another thing. I mean, let's say even HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give him the gift, which we learn out that Hashem Berach et Avraham Bakol is a reference to this amazing gift that he had to be able to work out all of the astronomical issues that he was involved in those times. Rashi says they used to come to him to find out about eclipses and about all of the signs of the Shemayim. They used to come to Avram Avinu because he was he was the head of astronomy in his generation. But even if that isn't the way that you understand the pasuk of Hashem Berach et Avraham Bakol, I mean, he was a zaken v'yoshev v'yeshiva avi. Remember that he was such a Talmud Chacham that he was going to be very makpid, and he would make sure absolutely that it was already after Chatzos. What, are you going to rely on a regular person? He's going to assume that it's Chatzos and he'll end up davening at the wrong time. And so because of that, we indeed were referring to Avram Avinu's mincha, and we did not mean that that should be applied Bisman Azevah Raya. We daven only from 12:30. We bring the carbon tamin only from 12:30. The Amar Reb Chama Barabbi Chanina. How do we know that Avram Avinu was a zaken v'yoshev v'yeshiva? May mehem shel avotenu lo parsha yeshiva mehem. From the very beginning, there was always a bezdin that would be yeshev, and there would be people that were sitting in front of the bezdin. Take a look when Moshe Rabbeinu is in Mitzrayim. So it says, Leich v'asavta zignei Yisrael. Where are the zignei Yisrael? What is that supposed to mean? I mean, it can't mean, as Rashi points out, he's going around finding all of the people that are old scattered throughout the whole country. So it's got to mean that there was a gathering of zignei Yisrael, which is always a reference. As we know, zaken is the lashon of zekana. This person has made it. He was kenei chokhmah already. So, are you bamidbar? Yeshivayim I am. And this started before Avram Avinu was a zaken v'yoshev b'yeshiva. Shneimar v'Avraham zaken baba yamim, and Yitzchak Avinu was a zaken v'yoshev b'yeshiva haya. Shneimar v'yiki zaken Yitzchak. Yaakov Avinu was a zaken v'yoshev b'yeshiva. Shneimar v'enei Yisrael kovdu mizoken. Eliezer Eved Avram was a zaken v'yoshev b'yeshiva. Shenema vayomer Avraham elavdo zikan beto. It's pshat zikan beto. It's an old man, so that's why he has to go traveling, because he's 90 years old. Obviously, it's not what it means. It means that he only trusted someone who was a full Talmud Chacham that could analyze whether this person was correct for his son and would be able to work out the dinim of the Kiddushim and so on and so forth. So that's what it must mean over there. And we know that the Lashon of Damesek Eliezer was also Omar Rabbi Elazar. This idea of Zekan Beso means that he was Moshel B'chol HaShelo, Moshel B'torat Rabo. Therefore, the Pasuk says, Hu Damesek Eliezer, which Rabbi Elazar also explained in the same way. Damesek is a notrikun. Dole Mashke, Damesek, which means that he would be able to draw out the entire Torah of Avram Avinu and be mashkel acherim. He could teach other people that Torah. So then the idea that Avram Avinu was capable, of course, that's understandable. But that we should be able to be on that madrega and be medayik to bring the tamid at the exact moment, even though it's an Erev Shabbos, even though it's a Pesach, which Erev Pesach, which comes out on an Erev Shabbos, we can't do that. Omar Rav, kiyem Avram Avinu kol haTorah kula, shenemar ekev asher shama Avraham bekoli, and it says vayishmor mishmarti mitzvotai chukotai v'toratai. So that means that he was shomer all of the Torah, and that is part of what we see over here. All of these inyonim of the takonas and what we're talking about, that he needed to be so medaktik, was it exactly the zman of chatzos? That's all part of what the zaken b'yeshiva means. How do you know that? Says Reb Shimi Bar Chiya. Maybe Omar le Reb Shimi Bar Chiya l'Rav. Maybe it just means that he was a baki gadol and was yeshev b'yeshiva to fully understand the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noyach. But what makes you say that he was Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kula? Well, I mean, it can't be just the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach if Hashem gave him Mila. So it's got to be more than the Sheva Mitzvahs. Fine. Okay. Eight mitzvahs. Okay. Sheva mitzvahs and mila. I mean, there's a big distance between eight mitzvahs and 613 mitzvahs. No. Omar Leis, Rav said to Reb Shimi, so then how do you understand that mitzvotai, chukotai, torotai? What is that referring to? If there's only sheva mitzvahs, but they know where are all these chukim and teres and so on? Obviously, it means that he was shemer kola teira kula. Omar Rava, vitemer Ravashi. He must have been Mekayim even Erev Tavshilin. Shenemar Torotai, Achat Torah Shebichtav, V'achat Torah Shebalpeh. He was Mekayim everything. So now, I mean, the question over here is, what exactly is the specific nature of Eruvei Tavshilin that we should be talking about Eruvei Tavshilin? Not to mention the fact that there's a big machlokas about whether it's even true that it's Eruvei Tavshilin, because there are some who learn that the original Girsa was simply Ayin Tav, and it really meant Eruvei Techumim. And somebody at one point transferred that into Eruvei Tavshilin, but that wasn't correct. That's what the Gro learns, and that it's a din specifically in the idea of Techumim, because the Gra learns is a remez to Ekev Asher Shomar Avraham. Ekev means that he was Shomer, that which had to do with his footsteps. Remember the story of Rabbi Meir when he was walking along with Acher, and he said, I measured the Tchum with the footsteps of my horse, right, with the Akevim. So a person can measure how many footsteps he takes in order to be careful about the Tchum. So therefore, this was a remez to Eruvei Tchumim specifically, in which he would be very careful to not walk outside of the Tchum. There's even a strange medrash that talks about that Avram Avinu was the Gadol Sheba Anakim. So it talks about how each one of his footsteps would be amazing. So he had to be very careful. more of a remez kind of thing. So he had to be very careful about how far he would walk. There's even those who learn that Eruvei Tavshilin doesn't mean Eruvei Tavshilin for Shabbos. Eruvei Tavshilin means mixtures of Tavshil. That's how it does this one, the Zikli Tavshil on the Chumash. And that it means that he was Makbid even if he mixed Boser B'cholov. Why does it have to say that? Because since it says that he fed the Malachim, it says he fed them tongue with milk. So apparently it wasn't Makbid on Boser B'cholov. So therefore, we needed the Gemara to tell us, no, first he gave them the milk, then he gave them the tongue, so that he was marked with even an Erev Tavshilin. In other words, he wouldn't have mixed the two when he cooked them together. That's also very cute possibility. Okay. Others actually point out, and this Rabbeinu Bachya brings, that it's true about both of them, that Ayin Tav is Erev Tavshilin, Eruvei Tchumim, and that he was shomer all of the various nature of Erevin. Now that has to do with the question, and it's really machlokas in the Gemara and Beitza, about what is the ikar point of Erev Tavshilin? Is it beikar, a shmira not to violate the idea of Yontev, and to make sure that you don't cook from Yontev to Chol? So we make you make an Erev Tavshilin, so you should remember you're only cooking from Yontev to Shabbos, because that you can do. But you'll avoid cooking from Yontev to Chol. Others learn that the idea of the Erev Tavshilin is to make sure that you'll be Mechabit Shabbos, and that you will keep a money up for the Shabbos. That was the main point of the Takan, as we'll see there. So, I mean, that would be the idea of the extension of the Dinim of Shabbos particularly, which would have to do with the Mishmarti. Now, over here, the Gemara brings it from Torotai. And perhaps the reason that we focus specifically on these inyanim is because they were all Mishmarot to the inyanim of Shabbos. Okay, there's a lot to discuss about the particular nature of the various Eruvim and how they work, but this was all merumas in the four levels of the Kiyam HaTorah of Avram Avinu. Now let's get back to understanding the Mishnah. because the Mishnah is a little bit weird. It gives us a conversation, and it doesn't tell us who says what. So it says Matya ben Shmuel Omer, then it says Acha bechevron v'u Omer Hain. Who says Hain? I don't get it. What, the guy who's up on the roof says Hain? So what, he's the guy who asks the question, he gives himself an answer? That's a little bit weird. He's the one who's having the dream, and he's the one that he explains his own dream? Hu chalim v'u mefasher. But on the other hand, if he's asking the question to the guy on the ground, how could the guy on the ground answer him? He doesn't know. Mino yada, how would he know? Says the Gemara, this could be understood in two different ways, okay? It could be understood that the guy who's on the ground is the one who says it. It could be understood that the guy who's on the roof. It could go like this. Look, the guy on the ground, on the roof, could be saying like this, that he says, hey, ear, p'nei ko hamizrach. So then the guy that's on the ground, the mamuna, shouts up to him, do you mean all the way up to Hebron it's late? And he says, yes, that's what I mean. So that way, everyone on the ground hears the remez to the Zechus Avos and to the Maris HaMachpelah. Or we could learn that it's actually the guy on the ground who's answering yes. So the guy on the ground was the one said, Heir p'nei kol hamizrach. And then the guy answers him, do you mean all the way up to Hebron? And he says, yes, that's what I mean. A little bit weird, but that's how Rashi learns. Some of the other Rishonim say that what it means is the guy answers him, yes, it's lit all the way to Hebron. And so the one on the ground says, really? Hain in the sense of really, meaning be very makpid that it got all the way up to Hebron. Okay, in any event, the Mishnah says, so why do we need this? And it answered because once the moon came up and they mistook it and so on and so forth, you can't mistake the moon for the sun. How could anybody think that a moonrise was a sunrise? Umi michlef, v'atanya Rebbe Omer, eno dome timur shel levana letimur shel chama. That the way that the light breaking forth from the moon is not at all similar to the way the sun, because the moon actually does not spread across the horizon. It's just like the sharp line of light. It's like a shaft of light. So timur shel levana mitamer v'olekim akel. It's like one stick of light. Whereas the timur shel chama, that spreads across the entire horizon because you see it much more when the sun is still much further below the horizon because of the fact that it's now reflecting off of the atmosphere where there's enough light for us to be reflecting back onto the earth. And because of that, it spreads across the entire horizon. So how could they have thought that a timur shel levana was the sun? Tana d'vei Rabbi Yishmael, that's because it was actually quite late and it was a very cloudy day. And because of that, the moon also becomes very diffuse because of the clouds. Omer of Papas, you learn a very important din from this, and it has makes a big difference la halacha, because Shema mina yuma de'iva kulei shimsha. If it's a cloudy day, then that means that you have to assume that the light of the sun is diffused all over the place, and you can never get away from it. L'may nafkamina. So first of all, in terms of the practical implication, if you spread out skins where normally your mak would spread it out in the sun, you don't have to spread it out in the sun, because the clouds manage to diffuse the sunlight all around. That's one practical nafkamina. Another nafkamina would be for the halacha of Pesach. It says over there that you're not allowed to knead dough in the sun on Pesach. Why? Because you're going to get it warmed up, and because of that, it will possibly be mitzchametz. So this would tell you that if it's a cloudy day, don't go outdoors at all, which is why, of course, we cover the windows when we do the actual kneading. As Richie can tell you, it's always in a place which is covered. So put a little mechitza around it and so on. There's another nafkamina, which would be nogea mila, because you're not supposed to be mal directly in the sun. Omrid Nachman, zuama deshimsha, koshi meshimsha. So the heat that is diffused all over the place on a muggy day is worse than just a clear day of sun. The way to remember that and to have a mashal for it is a dana dechal. If you have a jar of vinegar that's tightly sealed, and then you make a tiny pinprick of a hole in it, it's a crazy, woo, like you really get a burst of vinegary smell. And it's the same thing they have over here, that the once it's like held in by the bottle, or here the sun is being held in, so to speak, by the vapor in the air, it just makes wherever you're exposed to it very, very tough. Shavrire de shimsha. If you look at the sun as it breaks through some clouds, that's going to blind your eyes much worse than if you were just looking in a clear day. V'simanecha dilfa, that would be like if you're under a roof that's dripping, that is really irritating, much worse than actually being in water. I mean, you're in water, but when it's dripping, you know, it's like if you may be in the middle of a bathtub, but if your shower head is dripping onto you in the middle of a bathtub, the drip is the problem, not the water, right? So it's a beautiful mashal. Hirhure avera, kashumi avera. So fantasizing is much more difficult. The question what that means, kashumi avera. Much worse than actually doing some sexual sin. So what would that mean? Obviously, it doesn't mean in terms of the onesh. So Rashi says it just wears you down, fantasizing. It just like, it kills you. Masha Enkein, okay, you did something wrong. The Rambam learns that it's worse in the sense that anything that is just a physical act never impacts an individual the way that issues in his mind impact him. So since fantasizing is an aspect of mind and consciousness, it's going to have a much more powerful impact, a much longer lasting impact. So you know what it's like? It's like what they call earworms, where you have they use this in advertising all the time. You get like a certain jingle, you can't get that jingle out of your head. It's like amazing, right? It just keeps coming back into your head no matter what. So Rambam says that that's the point. If you're fantasizing, you can't get it out of your head. To get something out of your body is very easy. So that would be the marshal of your simanecha recha de bisra. They have the same idea. If you've got this, the neighbor has got this delicious braai out, you know, and he's got this roasting steak and lamb and whatever, it drives you absolutely bananas. If you're okay, you're eating a piece of meat. All right, fine. So you eat the piece of meat. But this thing can really make you just salivate there. Shilai de kaita kashi mikaita. The end of the summer is worse than the beginning of the summer in the sense that the same heat will feel much worse. V'simanecha tanura shagira. The metaphor for this is you got an oven that was very, very heated already before, and you've baked in it three cakes today, so you don't have to preheat it. And that heat goes directly into baking the cake. And the same thing over here, man, it gets hot, you're already, oh my God, everything is hot. So it's the same thing at the beginning of the summer, you know, your home still stays cool for a little bit, but once things warm up, you can never cool off. And that would be heat. This opposite is true, that ishta zesitva kashim in the kaita, if you get a fever in the winter, it's much worse than a fever in the summer, because simanecha tanura karira. Look, the way to note this is you start off with a cold oven. You need an hour of preheating. If this fever is so bad that it's got your cold body all hot in the middle of the winter, and it's like, 5 degrees outside and you can't have even a blanket on, you're boiling, obviously you are in bad shape. And migmar ba'atikta kashimichadata, relearning things that you had learned before and forgot, is more difficult than learning it in the first place. V'simanecha tina bartina. You try to make new cement out of old cement, and you got a very rough time doing that.